The Nature Journal is brought to you by SAPI in the interest of conserving our planet and enriching and empowering all South Africans.
So when I was chatting to Les Underhill, and you will remember that Les is from the ADU, that's the Animal Demography Unit down in Cape Town, and of course, even more importantly, that is also part of the Virtual Museum, and getting citizen scientists involved in environmental conservation monitoring, let alone anything else. And when I was chatting to Les, I asked him about spiders and scorpions, and who could I talk to in the organization about that? Well, he said to me, only one person, Ian Engelbrecht. Over a cup of tea before we were chatting on air, Ian explained to me that this was something that you started by eating them, Ian.
The story that my mother tells me is that before I could walk, I was crawling around on the carpet in our place in Park Moor, chasing Parktown prawns, happily picking them up by hand and showing them to her and my father, who were completely terrified by this whole exercise. I think that the response that I got inadvertently spurred on this interest and this passion that I've had ever since for things with more than two legs. The interest in spiders developed later on, probably when I was a couple of years old. I started keeping spiders in little bottles and fish tanks and things like that. When I was 8 years old, my dad, who was working in the construction industry at the time and had a big dam project up in Venda, brought me my first scorpion. And ever since then, I've been collecting and keeping scorpions.
One thing does fascinate me. I see by your finger you are married. This must have been quite an interesting session with relationships. And when somebody said to you, what are you going to bring me for a present, dear? Well, scorpion or spider will do.
My wife says that she'll never forget the day that we met. And I had a little envelope, which I said to her, oh, I've got something very interesting here to show you. And she looked inside and there was a scorpion sitting inside, and she's a very urban girl. She enjoys the bush, but she likes to stay on the back of the Land Rover with her gin and tonic. And she looked inside this envelope and she thought, oh, very interesting little scorpion. And then it moved and she was absolutely terrified. But I think with the charm and everything, I managed to to rescue that.
Ian, let's stay with scorpions for this program, I think, as our first one. Scorpions in the Gauteng area or in South Africa, do we have a great variety?
Southern Africa has the most diverse group of scorpions for anywhere in the world. We currently have about 150 described species, more or less, but we're discovering new ones all the time. Every year we turn up a handful of new species, and currently our estimate is that there are probably about 400 species within the region. We have everything from some of the most dangerous scorpions in the world to some of the most harmless, some of the smallest species, which can sit on the tip of your finger, up to some of the biggest, which reach over 20 centimeters in length. So we really have an incredible diversity.
That one were you saying, the sort of the 20 centimeter, is this the guy that you find up in the Waterberg?
You get them in the Waterberg, you get them in the Soutpansberg. It's a species of rock scorpion, and the males have got very elongated tails. It's actually an adaptation for being able to sting the females when they mate with them. The male goes into the rock crack with the female scorpion, and he needs that really long tail to get all the way around and sting her. It's part of the process of placating her before they mate, so that she won't try and eat him. But they're big animals, and when you stretch the scorpion out and with its tail, they're over 20 centimeters long.
Is this a fairly common practice from the mating point of view, where we go along and sting somebody to turn around and say, come here, dear, come closer to me, I need to talk to you about something?
Scorpions are cannibalistic, so you can imagine that that makes the process of mating quite interesting. The males have to put a lot of work into getting the female into a frame of mind to want to mate and not to eat the male. So he shows a number of behaviors like this. They show something called juddering, where the scorpion stands up on his legs and vibrates backwards and forwards. That's before he meets the female, and he's basically sending out a signal saying, I'm a male, I'm willing to mate, are there any females around who are interested? When he meets up with the female, he grabs hold of her with his pincers and they start doing a little scorpion dance. He pulls her backwards and forwards over the ground, looking for a place to lay down his spermatophore, which is the little package that contains the sperm. In some species, the male will actually kiss the female. He pulls her up close and massages her mouth parts with his own mouth parts, and then you get sometimes they sting the female if she's still reluctant. In some species, the male will actually club the female with his tail if she's not cooperating. Basically what they have to do.
I'm just trying to think that in the modern world, this could be a few lawsuits.
It's usually the females that come out tops, though. Once they've mated, the female tries to grab that male to kill him and eat him. You've never seen terror in a scorpion like you've seen in a male that's just mated. Sometimes they're actually paranoid for a good while afterwards. Anything that moves gives them a big fright, because they think it might be the female that's coming after them.
Is there any research that shows this is done to ensure that the genes you have given to the next scorpion are not passed on to somebody else?
It's probably because the female wants to have a good meal now that she's impregnated and she's going to have all these offspring that she needs to feed and nourish. Once she's mated, she doesn't need to mate again. And the easiest first meal is obviously the mate you've just mated with.
Once she's impregnated, scorpion birth is live egg form.
Very interestingly, scorpions give birth to live young, not something that you see very often in arthropods. In some species, it's an ovoviviparous form of live birth. The female is simply retaining the eggs within her body until the point where the embryos are fully developed, and then she gives birth to them. But in a lot of scorpions, they actually have a fully viviparous form of embryo development. The embryos receive all of their nutrition directly from the female, which is quite incredible for a group of primitive animals.
Fair number of youngsters that are born, or is it sort of one or two?
Some scorpions only have a handful of babies, five or six. The average is about 20 to 30, but there are some species, particularly the big thick-tailed scorpions of the genus Parabuthus, they can have up to 90 babies at a time.
Once a little fellow like that is born, I would imagine high predation by everybody else. This is a case of McDonald's. Pull in, guys, have a scorpion meal.
Scorpions actually show very strong maternal behavior, so the mother will actually look after those babies for a couple of weeks after they're born. The babies are very vulnerable when they're born. They're not able to move around very well. They're prone to dehydration and they can't feed. They all climb up onto the mother's back and they sit there for about 2 weeks, and she protects them. She'll stay in a safe place under a rock or in a rock crack or something, or down a burrow, and they basically wait until they've shed their skins for the first time. When they come out, they get all the little structures that they need to be able to move around and catch their own prey and look after themselves. And they'll stick around with her for a week or two after that before they go off to make lives for themselves. And predation on baby scorpions is very high, yes. I don't think anybody's ever looked at the number of babies that will survive, but it's probably within the region of 10% or so.
The youngsters that are that tiny, the sting in something like a Parabuthus, do the youngsters have as powerful a sting as the parent?
The venom is exactly the same, but obviously because the scorpion's so much smaller, it's got a lot less venom than what the adult has. And also, particularly in very small scorpions, it's more difficult for them to sting you. They actually battle to get their sting through your skin. When you're considering how dangerous a scorpion is, the size matters a lot, because that's determining how much venom that animal can actually deliver.
On your scorpions, is it factual? Big pincers, little tail, don't worry, not going to hurt you at all. Small pincers, big tail, get the hell out of there.
That's exactly the rule of thumb that you need to use. So the dangerous scorpions that we have in southern Africa, we've got several species. They all belong to the genus Parabuthus, and these are the guys that get quite large, and they've got a really thick tail. Some of the big species, like Parabuthus transvallicus or Parabuthus villosus, their tail can be as thick as your pinky finger, and it's very, very strong. They use that big, thick, muscular tail to plunge the sting into prey or to defend themselves, get the sting in really deep, and deliver a good dose of venom really deep into whatever's attacking them or whatever they want to eat. The scorpions with the big pincers and the thin tails, they will only use their stings if they absolutely need to. So they actually crush their prey to death with their pincers. They defend themselves with their pincers, and they'll sting if they feel particularly threatened or if a prey item struggles a lot.
You mentioned earlier in the program as well, Ian, that you have a never-ending supply of new being found. Is this a case of development of existing species, or do these tend to be completely new?
Evolution takes a long time. So these are all species that exist out in the wild at the moment that we just haven't found yet. In spite of the amount of work that's been done on scorpions in southern Africa, they're probably one of the better known groups of invertebrates, third after butterflies and dragonflies and things like that. We know them quite well, but Southern Africa is such a diverse region environmentally, topographically, in terms of the vegetation types we've got. There are so many little niches that scorpions have evolved to fill. People just haven't surveyed extensively enough to get them all.
We've got this fear of anything we don't understand. Do we have a lot of scorpions in our urban areas that are just quite happily living there and going about their business? And of course, the question is, what good do they do to the planet?
There is one species of scorpion that's quite comfortable in urban areas. It's a small brown thing, about 2 to 4 centimeters in length. It is a thick-tailed scorpion, although it's a very placid species. The sting is not dangerous. If it does sting you, it feels more or less like a bee sting. I've heard very interesting stories. People have found them on the 14th floor of buildings in Hillbrow. I've heard someone was playing on the piano and one walked out from in between the keys on the piano. They're quite happy in gardens. Gardens are a nice environment for them. People water the gardens. There are lots of insects around, and they seem to have adapted quite well to that environment. But not something that we really need to worry about. If you do ever find one in your house, the best thing to do is just take a jar or glass or something, put it over the scorpion, slide a piece of paper in underneath, and take the scorpion out and release it back in the garden. In terms of the ecological role of scorpions, they do play a very important part, particularly in arid ecosystems. Scorpions are very abundant in arid ecosystems. They're very important predators for other arthropods, and they provide an important food source for a wide range of predators. Owls, lizards, all sorts of things depend on scorpions for something to eat.
Do we have endangered scorpions in South Africa? Red darter species?
We do, actually. There are several species that have very limited distributions. They are threatened by habitat transformation, particularly agriculture, sometimes urban development. And because they have such small distribution ranges and such specific habitat requirements, it's very easy to wipe out a population or impact on that species in a negative way. Another significant threat is collecting for the pet trade. A lot of people are interested, believe it or not, in keeping scorpions as pets at home in a fish tank. And the more exotic species that you can have, the better. So people come here and they collect scorpions and they take them overseas and sell them for a lot of money. And that can also impact negatively.
I would imagine a scorpion doesn't really make a good pet. You can't take it for a walk, won't go to the shop, and won't do tricks on command.
No, absolutely not. What makes it worse is that a lot of species have these specific habitat requirements, which are very difficult to replicate in captivity. We can't breed scorpions in captivity, so you can't supply this demand from the pet trade with captive bred animals. They live for a year or two in captivity and then they die. So really not something that that people should be considering as a pet.
People who are looking, finding scorpions, is there an interest in recording the data from a citizen science point of view?
Absolutely. As I said, the more we can find out about our scorpions, the better for us, for conservation, for research. And we've actually just started a new virtual museum on the Animal Demography Unit's website. It's called the Scorpion Map Project. And people can go out, take photographs of the scorpions that they see, upload their records to that virtual museum, and experts like myself will go on and identify them, so you get to learn a little bit about the scorpion, and your records will go into a database.
On this sort of thing, though, does this require a great big SLR camera with macro lenses, and you need to be an expert photographer?
Absolutely not. We're getting some great photos being taken with cell phone cameras. Basic point and shoot camera is more than enough. What you should do is try and photograph the scorpion from directly above. That's probably the best for identifying it. Try get close enough that the scorpion takes up most of the frame of the photograph. We have some people who photograph the scorpions from about 2 meters away. Yeah, it's very, very easy to do.
And of course, the website is www.adu.org.za. Once you're inside there, go and have a look for Scorpion Map. I like the sound of that. And equally, you can then get involved in a citizen science project where people like Ian rely on the average Joe citizen in the street, you and me, to go out, take photographs, and of course, upload the information into the net. We also obviously need a positioning there at the same time. I mean, that's going to be really great to get that GPS. Some of the cameras have got them in, and others, of course, you just use the Google Earth that's provided.
That's right, yeah. Very easy to add the information. It's limited information. It takes you a couple of minutes to upload a record. As Les Underhill says, your first record is the most difficult, and after that, it's easy as pie.
And of course, you know, I'm assuming that it's a case of flood it with records, guys. It's better to have too much than too little.
Absolutely. Every single record is valuable. So put them all up there and learn about scorpions at the same time and make a contribution.
Treating scorpion stings, Ian, how easy?
It's relatively easy. It depends on what you get stung by. If you're stung by a thin-tailed scorpion, the only symptoms you're going to have is pain at the site of the sting. The best thing to do is to put an ice pack on it just to try and alleviate the pain a little bit, and that's it. If you do get stung by a dangerously venomous scorpion, you need to treat it the same way that you would a snake bite. The venom doesn't travel in the blood, so don't try to use a tourniquet to cut off the blood flow. Don't try and cut the site of the sting and suck the venom out or anything like that. Simply apply a pressure bandage to the limb that's been stung, immobilize the limb, and get the person to hospital as quickly as possible. In hospital, they treat the sting symptomatically, and if you do have serious effects, such as breathing difficulties, they will treat those accordingly in hospital.
That obviously is neurotoxic. Do we have any cytotoxins or hemotoxins in scorpion venom?
No, only neurotoxic. So the neurotoxins affect the nerves, the communication system in your body. It gets in the way of your brain telling your lung and your hearts to carry on beating. The sting is very painful. There are compounds in the sting that are designed specifically to cause pain, obviously for the scorpion to defend itself.
And I would also imagine that the pain is to make sure that you understand, don't go there a second time round. Ian, is there a good website we can drive people on to learn about scorpions, to understand more about these creatures?
I think the best thing to do if you want to start learning about scorpions is to get a hold of Jonathan Leeming's Field Guide on Scorpions of Southern Africa. It's got a lot of good basic information, and it also covers all of the commonly seen scorpion species that you'll see in the region. If you have a more technical interest, you can go to the website of the American Museum of Natural History, where you'll be able to get scientific papers on scorpions. And then obviously you can do searches on the internet for information about scorpions. One other thing worth mentioning is that there is a Facebook group called Scorpions of Southern Africa that people can go on and join. You can also post photographs there, ask questions, and network with other people that are knowledgeable about scorpions.
Give us that Facebook name again.
The group is called Scorpions of Southern Africa. There are several groups like it. There's also a Reptiles of Southern Africa. There's the Spider Club of Southern Africa and Amphibians of Southern Africa. All of these are very closely linked with the virtual museums at the Animal Demography Unit, the same people running both things. But Facebook is nice. It's interactive and a great place to learn.
Well, Ian, on that one, I think the next program we're going to bend your ear around will be some spider stuff. Also something that people fear. Strange how we fear some of the smallest things the greatest. Ian, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
The Nature Journal is an initiative in support of the sustainability of our planet, its people, and prosperity. Brought to you by Sappi, Global Paper, Packaging, and Cellulose Company. Sappi, inspired by life.